This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
I actually need to update that graphic. Matt Moore is here on so much sleep, well rested, also drinking Red Bull. Get it ready for the playoffs. That is not an ad, although if Red Bull would like to sponsor, I don't know why.
Yeah, I need Red Bull to sponsor me just so I can just to offset the costs at this point.
Matt, we are going to preview the playoffs, obviously, for people checking in on the channel. For the first time, thank you for watching. And if you're back, thank you for sticking with us. We did a WNBA draft show last night, and it was really, really fun. Some people came out. Siobhan Beslow gave some great analysis, and we talked about a bunch of shit stemming from that. Now, here, we have the NBA playoffs, the MNBA, as some people ironically called it on Twitter, which I think is awesome. We have 4 playoff series that we know about and we know the play-in is going to determine the rest. We will talk about the play-in. We will start going series by series. Matt, follow Matt's work, many Substacks, Action Network as well, where we work together. You have the Denver Dig. You want to name all of them?
You can catch two Substacks, Hardwood Paroxysm for general NBA stuff. And not general, like very specific, but broad NBA stuff. And then the Denver Dig covers the Denver Nuggets. You can catch me at Locked On NBA every day, Monday through Friday. We do a show. It's a great show. Covers all the big topics in sports. And I'm also on the Locked On Nuggets podcast.
There you go.
Oh, and I'm at Fansided. Right there.
I know all about having too many jobs where you can't. Like,
I know you do.
Can't keep track of it all. I know you do. Yeah. Okay. Let's start with start with the Nuggets. We'll start with Nuggets Clippers. And if you have a question, comment, super chat, please do donate, contribute, all those different things. We will be putting up comments throughout the show if you have them. Nuggets Clippers, first off. I mean, to me, this is arguably, and maybe not even arguably, but to me, this is arguably the most interesting series in this round. I have no idea how this is going to go. This is the one that's probably the toughest for me, Matt. You're very close to the Nuggets, obviously, and you've been covering them throughout the season, and you've been cautioning me at moments where I've had optimism about this team.
Yeah,
they fired Michael Malone.
They did.
Where are they at now heading into the playoffs?
So the vibes are better. Cleaning out, it's not just Michael Malone. It's cleaning out Calvin Booth versus Michael Malone. So it's that dynamic has shifted. So their locker room's able to kind of come together with a fresh start. Like there's no longer like your Booth guy, your Malone guy feuding over that. Peyton Watson, Jalen Pickett, those guys were kind of caught in the crossfires. So the roster, I think, is more together. The problem is like coming together doesn't mean that you're not garbage defensively. And like this is really the question. To me, the Nuggets have so much more firepower than this Clippers team. This Clippers team, it's like, well, but they have Kawhi. Great, very elite mid-range shooter. When he's available and on the court and plays and is active and engaged. They have James Harden. Yeah, really great passer, incredible passer, can hit the floater versus drop coverage. That's absolutely a weapon. Norman Powell. Okay, Norman's kind of faded off a little bit. Norman can score. He's got some power. Who after that? Ivica Zubac in the post? Is that what you want to go to? Because like, I don't think you want to go to that. That's not as efficient. If this is a two-point battle, you're going to lose. Like, you're going to lose in a three-point battle versus the Nuggets. You need to be able to hit threes consistently at volume to outpace Denver. Now, the counter here is that Denver's defense is so trash ass that they can actually just go ahead now and let you outpace them. If Denver's defense is tighter, which it has been under David Adelman, who has kind of shifted some of the defensive principles, they're playing a little bit more drop. They're staying home a little bit better on shooters. They're navigating those things a little bit better. The execution is still not there. There's going to be a lot of weak spots. Like, the Clippers are going to be able to pick what they want to attack here. But the overall efficiency, I think, is going to be a problem because this Nuggets offense is elite. It is. And so Chris Dunn, defender on Jamal Murray. Like, here's a good question is like, who's going to have a better time? Chris Dunn defending Jamal Murray, who has been healthy and looked like he has burst, or Aaron Gordon versus Kawhi Leonard, who is a much better player than Jamal, but doesn't necessarily like lift everybody up. He doesn't make everybody better. He's a good passer. He's not an elite passer. He's not a great playmaker. And Aaron is like, if you built in a lab a Kawhi defender, I would build Aaron Gordon. Big, rangy, length, athleticism, can stay with him, not going to get muscled off, discipline, going to be able to hang there. Now, Kawhi's going to cook him because it's Kawhi, and there's nothing you can do against his pull-up J. Like, there's nothing you can do. But if you're like, what's the best option? Aaron Gordon is about the best option you're going to find, I think, in the NBA. I worry about Aaron a lot in Denver in the Nuggets matchups because you have to have that, like, he's their best defender in the starting unit. And there's oftentimes not a good matchup for him. It's like a guard that's too fast or a big that's too big. And instead, this is just the right size. Like, this is Goldilocks matchup for Aaron Gordon. So all those things combined, it's really going to be a matter of, does Denver play to the level of defense it has all season? Or does it play to the level of defense it's shown in particular times, which has been good defense for stretches? And I don't blame anybody for doubting it because I think it's overall terrible because of personnel and scheme. But I do think the firepower matchup is a very big deal here.
So I have a few concerns with this series. One is just general health. That starts with Kawhi Leonard, obviously.
Yep.
He's been injured in playoff series. There's been times where he's been dominant in a playoff series and didn't finish the series in his career. Obviously, there's been injury concerns with him all season long. There are no more back-to-backs, so that's good. If he's healthy, he's going to go the rest of the way. We could assume that. But the if he's healthy part is big. Also, you mentioned Jamal Murray's health. I do wonder, and this is another concern I have, or actually I'll phrase this in the form of a question. Should the depth for Denver be a concern now that you can kind of get away with going 7 or 8 deep and you can play guys? Like, this is the time of year where you have to play guys 40 plus minutes if absolutely necessary. And granted, against the Clippers can wear you down. And defensively, they're super talented on that. And I don't know if people are giving them enough credit necessarily. Do you think that the Nuggets not having to play as deep of a rotation is going to be beneficial for them, even against a defense that could be taxing to their already really good offense?
So there's a couple of weak points in the Nuggets second unit. There's nothing but weak points in their second unit. It's been awful this year. As it is almost every single year. There's something about playing with Jokic that actually makes you worse. I'm not sure what that is when he's not on the floor. Like, there's something about playing with Jokic to where he's not on the court. This team gets drastic. Like, they lose the ability to play basic basketball.
They rely on him a lot.
Yes. One of the things you want to get to is you want to get to Aaron Gordon at the five. And that's hard when you're playing a traditional center who's got size, athleticism, strength, can, you know, basically just beat the crap out of Aaron. The Clippers don't have that. They're not playing really a traditional center in their backup 5 minutes. So it's a lot of small ball. Now, the problem is that Kawhi Leonard staggers with that second unit. That's the rotation they've been running, is that he comes out about the 4 minute mark and re-enters at the start of the second. That's disastrous for Denver. Denver against these staggered lineups gets murdered. It's one of the reasons I've advocated over and over and over again for them to do the same with Jokic. Jokic should leave at the 4 minute mark, re-enter at the beginning of the second, play 4 minutes, sit, and then close out the second quarter. Jokic doesn't want to do that. Jokic wants to play all 12 of the first and third, sit for 4 minutes, come back in at the 8 minute mark. The problem is then that 4 minutes, you can get absolutely, like, they've lost double digit leads consistently this season. Not once, not twice, over and over again, because Yoke will do the work and they'll have a double-digit lead. The starters will play great, and then the bench unit comes in and everything gets dicey. When you have Aaron at the five, it raises it a little bit, but like there's a lot of, I think, question marks here because they had the addition of Bogdanovich. Like those second unit lineups for the Clippers are Bogdanovich and Kawhi. So like Nuggets first quarter, think they're going to lead. Nuggets second quarter, they're going to get the shit kicked out of them. Like that's going to happen. They're just going to get the crap kicked out of them because of the way that the Clippers build their lineups, unless Denver dramatically adjusts. But if it's Ben Simmons at the five, Aaron Gordon's fine. And like that negates some of it. A lot of it is like the Nuggets want to get stops and run with that second unit. And they don't have a lot of action that they can kind of go to. I think the Nuggets can at least play them to where it's only like a minus two, minus four. And if you do that, you can make up for it with how good the starters are.
I don't think you're going to pick Denver to win this series.
I'm real close on it. Like it's borderline. Like every time, here's my gut instinct when I kind mm-hmm. of, I know a certain amount of elements in my head. And if I kind of take like a very, if I take a step back and I look at it, I'm just like, the Nuggets have too much firepower. They're going to win and win the series in late games, like late number of series games. It's just like, do I really believe that this 23rd ranked defense that I've seen get torched for corner threes all season, do I really think that they're going to get enough stops to win a playoff series? If it was the Wolves, no. If it's the Lakers, no. If it's Houston, probably, but maybe, I don't know. Like Houston's really good.
Yeah.
But this Clippers team, here's a good question is, mm-hmm. the Clippers with Kawhi are elite. That's what the numbers say, is that when he's on the court, they are not just like a good team. Like they are elite. Their offense is 7 points better with him on the court. It's 117 offensive rating versus 110. They're plus 13 net, which is better than Jokic's on-court net with Kawhi. The question is like, all right, we have 2 months of sample here with Kawhi against a mostly not great strength of schedule. Do you believe it? Like, do you believe in that more than you believe in kind of the overall profile of the Nuggets? Because the overall profile of the Nuggets is like they're better, but it's that Kawhi sample. And that's what I think gets really tough. I don't blame anybody for taking Clippers. I'll take Nuggets in seven. I think this is a coin flip.
I think this is a coin flip also. I want to lean Nuggets in seven also because of everything you laid out. Plus, I feel like I have a higher floor with Jokic, which sounds very obvious. But the top end of the Clippers roster, it's still a lot for me to be like, I'm going to trust Kawhi's health. And although he's been better than expected this year, James Harden's playoff history versus the best player in the NBA who just had a season that people are still talking themselves into voting for him for MVP. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but it gives you an idea of how consistent Jokic has been for the past few and perhaps several years at this point. And if Jamal Murray is healthy, which we're going into this series with the mindset that he is, I just like Denver more, especially because they don't have to go too deep into their bench. Now, beyond round one is where I struggle with them. Yeah. I struggle with them in this series too, to be clear. But once we get past this and we're talking about the next round, where it's Oklahoma City more than likely, then that's a little different. Maybe a lot different.
A big question mark here, honestly, is Nick Batum's health. He's got a groin injury and
sneaky important to them. Yes.
If he comes back, I'm going to start leaning towards Clippers. Like I think I'm just going to tilt that way. So that to me is like where we kind of get to is because they can play Nick at five. And now you have a stretch five that can, and honestly, he can disrupt Jokic in a lot of those minutes if Zoo's off the floor. If Zoo gets in foul trouble, Nick does as good a job as anybody of fronting. So Nick Batum injury is a big one to watch, I think, in the series and could genuinely be the decider between the Nuggets advancing or the Clippers advancing.
If you're watching, let us know what you think about Nuggets Clippers and let us know what you think about this next series we're about to talk about. We're going to keep it in the Western Conference, the 3-6 matchup, Lakers-Wolves. I am very excited for this one just because of not just the star power in this, but I think this could tilt in two very different directions.
Yeah.
Like there's a world where with the Lakers, like the creativity is just too much. The late game execution is just on point. it's not just LeBron and Luka, but it's also Austin Reeves. And you have maybe Gabe Vincent and Dorian Finney-Smith hitting enough three-point shots, just holding the defense enough together. Also Rui Hachimura. And then there's another world where the Timberwolves almost kind of grind them down and make it very difficult to get some of these shots off. I do have questions about who guards who from a Minnesota perspective as it relates to the Lakers. And then you have like just this world where, all right, what the Rudy Gobert piece, what does that look like? Is Anthony Edwards going to have to go off in this series, or is it better if he does not? You know, like there's just a lot of questions I have with this series. So what's your approach as it pertains to Lakers Wolves, and what are the things that you're keying in on the most?
Minnesota 10 and 15 versus top 10 offenses. That feels relevant that they haven't. Now, their numbers are good in those games. They have the fifth best offense, 13th best defense in those games versus top 10 offenses. Now, but think about that slide for Minnesota from a top five defense to 13th against those top five, top 10 offenses. That's huge because, and my starting, I am working through to make sure, doing my deep dive work today on it. What I will say is, my first initial thing was, I don't see fundamentally how this matchup is different than Mavericks Wolves last year. A lot of people have mentioned like, hey, you don't have the lob threat of Gafford and Lively. Jackson Hayes, I think, is good at those, but you're right. That's true. What I do think is that you have more reliable three-point corner shooters in Rui Hachimura and Dorian Finney-Smith. And you do have a secondary playmaker in LeBron James, who is going to be at an advantage in most times. I'm going to be very curious to see if they put LeBron on Randall, and if they're just like, hey, you're going to have to play like the physical, I know you're 40, but you're going to have to deal with this like absolute just bull of a player who's so strong and physical, or if LeBron's like, no, thanks. I'm not taking Randall. I'm taking Jaden McDaniels. And if that's the case, Jaden's going to get a lot of cuts and slips and corner threes because LeBron falls asleep helping up in those situations. I don't know why, but he cannot help himself drifting up in those corner situations where he should just be staying home.
He still wants the steals to go coast to coast and dunk. That's what it
right,
is.
Right. And so like a good question also is, all right, if they put two on ball with Ant, if they play hedge with his primary defender, Dorian Finney-Smith and Jackson Hayes, and they play at the level to try and blitz Ant, who Ant's seen a lot of that coverage and he's gotten really good at passing out of it. That's a spot where like LeBron having to play that weak side zone versus the dunker spot in the corner is about as good as you're going to get. Like they have such, and not just LeBron, Dorian Finney-Smith and Rui, that trio of forwards is as good as you're going to find with that weak side zone if you put two on ball. So to me, that winds up being like a very interesting question of like their ability to neutralize, I think, the Wolves offense versus a defense that I still think we're figuring out. There was a stretch there where the Lakers defense looked amazing, and there's a stretch there where the Lakers defense looked horrible. If Rudy Gobert could hit a hook shot, I'd feel differently about this series, but he can't. Like a lot of this is just comes down to like, do you think Julius Randle is going to be able to average 18 to 24 points in this series? And if you don't, based off of his long history of suffering in the playoffs,
I don't.
Then you got to go Lakers here. Because they don't have anybody for Luka. Anybody. Like, we singled this out last year. I started betting Dallas Mavericks to make the finals when they got past the Oklahoma City Thunder. That was the minute I started hitting that consistently on Buckets, our podcast of the Action Network, was, look, the Wolves are elite defensively. They do not have a matchup here. Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Anthony Edwards are too small. So Luka's able to back you down in ISO, get to that mid-post area where he can hit the one-legged fadeaways and the up-and-unders and then all these kind of counter moves. They don't have an option for it. There's no counter. Even if they do good in the pick-and-roll, which I don't think they will, if they keep Rudy out of the switches, if they manage to execute at level effectively with Rudy, even if they do that, Luka's going to adjust by just ISOing, and there's no real counter for that. So to me, this is the best unit on the floor is the Wolves defense. It is, but not in this matchup. In this matchup, the best unit's going to be the Lakers offense, and then it's probably going to be the Wolves offense, and then it's going to be the Lakers defense, and then it's going to be the Wolves defense. And when the Wolves' strength is made into the worst weakness in this matchup, I got no choice but to go towards the Lakers.
We have a question here from Jokic's prime is being wasted. Thank you for the comment. How important is Dante DiVincenzo, who hasn't been awesome against the Lakers this year? Is he a swing piece for you in this series at all?
Yeah, so a lot of this is what the Lakers give up is above the break threes. That's actually what they give up more of. They're very good at closing out to the corners because of that weak side zone stuff that I talked about. The best above the break shooter on the Minnesota Timberwolves is Dante DiVincenzo. He's been terrific in that area. So you've got kind of this opportunity for them to be able to hit a lot of those kind of threes. I think Dante, I actually bet Dante to lead the series in three-pointers made because I think that he's going to have a huge part of the series. Now, if he's able to hit in those second unit matchups, I think you've got a real opportunity here. But one of the problems is like Dante is not a switch hunter. That's not what he does. Conley's not a switch hunter. It's not what he does. Ant can, but they're not going to give it to him. Right? You need guys that are going to be like, I'm going to force Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic into this action. I'm going to put them in these pick and roll actions and I'm going to punish them for it. They don't have a lot of those guys. Ant's the only one and they'll just blitz him. So they're not going to have an opportunity to do that. So to me, I wind up on the other side of this where it's like, I think Dante's going to have a really great offensive series. And I think he'll have a lot of opportunities because of the amount of attention they'll have to generate towards Ant and the size on the interior. But I do think that like Dante's going to have a good series relative to other guys, but it's more about the other guys are going to struggle. I do think Dante's going to be a big factor in the series, though.
We have a follow-up. Same commenter. Thank you. I hope you're not actually Calvin Booth. That'd be funny. We have, what if they let Luka have his and put McDaniels on Reeves and rotate fresh defenders on Reeves to wear him out, like Neil Alexander Walker and Jalen Clark? That is an interesting strategy because, as you just touched on, and we hit this last year, McDaniels was going to be the guy who guards Luka, and we were like, he's too small. He's not going to do it. So does Minnesota just decide to take the L on that and is like, all right, you can bother Reeves instead. Luka can do what he wants to do. And then from there, you have these other matchups that you can sort of sort through and maybe manage better.
It's a great strategy. Coaches never go for it. Even Finch, who I think is excellent. Mm. If you ask me to build a strategy for against Luka Doncic, and look, Chris Finch knows about it 7 million times more about basketball than I do, but just based off of the work that I've done studying this stuff, my genuine strategy would be in the first half of these games, for 2.5 quarters, you play drop coverage. And you go, if you want that mid-range pull-up, you got it, buddy. Go for it. We are not switching. We're coming over the top. You can isolate. You can score on your own. We're staying home on everybody. You're not getting lobs. And you're not getting corner three-point shots. You're not getting them to shooters. You can take them all you want. If you want to score 50 in the first half, go for it. After 2.5 quarters, you blitz him. You blitz him over and over and over again. You send hard doubles at him in isolation and force him to make those passes to shooters who have not touched the ball for 36 minutes. That's the objective there, is you take everybody else out of rhythm by telling Luka you can have one of the best playoff games of your career, then you blitz him. But Chris Finch won't go for it. They won't do it. They're going to put their best defender on Luka Doncic, and he's going to get cooked. And that is what they will do, because you never want to get so far away from your game plan that your team thinks that you don't have confidence in them. Once that confidence starts to erode, everything falls sideways. So that's the reason they won't do it.
I don't see myself picking against the Lakers in this series. One of the things that I'm really thinking about as it pertains to this particular series is Rudy Gobert, who I think is going to be one of the most watched players in the series for obvious reasons. We've been doing this for years. And I guess where I'm at with Rudy Gobert at this point is, what kind of a Rudy Gobert series are we actually expecting here? Is this a he dominates the paint series because the Lakers don't have a ton of size? Or is this a series where they're going to spread him out and he's going to struggle to close out on shooters? And then people are saying that he's getting played off the floor in the playoffs again, which some people would say is overstated, but I think it's something that will be discussed in this series, particularly with Luka Doncic and LeBron James and Austin Reeves on the other side.
Something that Rudy doesn't get enough credit for is that he does actually attack his weaknesses. He doesn't just sit there and have these weaknesses and be like, no, I'm going to play my game. It's not what he does. The criticism was, hey, you can't switch, so he got better at switching. Hey, you can't play at level, so he got better at level. Hey, we're going to put you in the corner and space you out. He's gotten better at those rotations, but there's only so much you can do. That corner rotation, when you have to help down and recover, it's the hardest thing in the NBA right now. You just can't get there. You just can't. No one can manage that space. You can't really help in the paint and show to prevent a layup attempt and then run all the way out to a corner three. Ball's faster than the man. So it's an impossible situation. And I do think that eventually they're going to get to that spot where it's like, yeah, they're going to play LeBron at five. Now, the question is like, is LeBron going to be okay if they put Rudy on LeBron and they space LeBron? Is LeBron going to be okay spacing to the corner? LeBron's probably going to be like, give me the ball, I'll attack him in ISO.
Yes.
And you can do that, right? But is that like your best tactic? Is that maximizing your offense? And so like, I'm curious about what Redick's going to do, because JJ's most likely, because he knows the consequences, to be like, go get him, LeBron, go get him. And if he does that, it's fine. You can't switch is the thing with him on Luka. You can't do it. You cannot. If they do that, then they're already sunk. If they put themselves in situations where they're like, we can't prevent the switch, you got no shot.
But JJ Redick, like that's what he's going to, that's the number one thing he's going to try to exploit.
But I will say this, JJ doesn't get that call. Luka gets that call. Luka gets to dictate what switch he hunts. And I'll tell you this, Luka is not a serial killer the way some guys are, where they're like, I'm going to hunt down the weakest matchup and I'm going at you every single time. Shea's a little bit of a serial killer. Shea's like, I know you can't guard me. Get back over here. Nope. I don't care if you're guarding my shooting guard. He's setting the screen, right? Cade, little bit of a serial killer. He's like, nope, get back over here.
Jimmy Butler does this too, actually.
Come here, little bunny. Like every single time that's what they're hunting. Luka, because of, I think, his hubris, is oftentimes like, no, I want the best defender. No, I want the best defender on me, and I'll show you. And it works because Luka's awesome, but like that's the decision that he makes a lot of the time.
Right.
When they were facing some of these different matchups, I was always like, why are you not hunting this guy? And it was like Luka trying to get the hardest defender he could on him to attack. Now, maybe JJ gets through to him and is like, hey, man, we can win a title. Will you just put Rudy in the action? Like, just do that. But the other thing I do think is you're going to see them play drop. Luka doesn't have a pull-up J. He doesn't. He's got a dribble jumper, a post-up jumper. He's got so many moves. Doesn't have that two dribble off the pick pull-up jumper. He's not quick enough, so it gets blocked from behind. So if he figures that out and he goes to it, or if he figures out a longer floater that's just automatic, then you're dead. But you got to kind of live with that. So I'm just going to be very curious to see who they put Rudy on and how they use those kind of interactions, because I think it's going to be a big part of the ways that the Lakers can solve this. The problem is just like there are so few teams, I think, that can solve the Wolves this way, and the Lakers are one of them. They have the ability because of their ball handlers, talent, and shooting to do this.
Yeah, and I think the Lakers low-key got a, I wouldn't say favorable bracket to disrespect the Wolves and the Rockets, but favorable, and potentially who the Rockets play, but favorable from the standpoint of just matchups aren't terrible for them.
One last note. Since the trade, the Lakers are 7-4 versus top 10 defenses with the 10th best defense and the 3rd best offense. These are the teams that they hurt. So, yeah, I like Lakers here.
6? 5?
5.
Yeah, I was thinking 5 or 6. I don't think it's 7.
Here's what sucks is I think if the Wolves got in a different bracket, if they got the Nuggets bracket 4-5 and then were able to then turn around and go Thunder, I think they could make the Western Conference Finals. This is what sucks is they just got the worst bracket for them.
Question from Rob, random question. Appreciate random questions on the program. Do you guys think the outcome of the Wolves playoff result will dictate whether or not Ant will ask out in the offseason?
No, I think it's too early. I think Ant has, like, they've shown they can build a winner around him. They made the conference finals last year. I think even with his frustrations, the ownership thing being settled, their willingness to make moves to be like, yeah, we're going to disrupt this. And I think one of the things that's been important is Ant has gotten to watch, like, he didn't understand why they traded for Rudy Gobert. He was pissed when they did it. He was like, you just made the playoffs.
That's
like,
right.
Just made the playoffs. We had Memphis right where we wanted them. Like, no, like, what are we doing? And then it worked out, and he was like, okay, I guess Rudy's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then they trade Kat for Julius Randle, and he's like, what the fuck? Like, we just made the Western Conference Finals, and now they're back in the playoffs and pretty dangerous. And he's like, oh, okay, all right.
So, I don't think he asks out if they lose in 5. or six. But I mean, I do think there are more questions because this is coming off the euphoria of last
year. Yeah, I mean, look, I think we're headed there. He's going to be gone eventually. That's just how it works in the NBA. I hate it, but
and in Minnesota,
I don't think it happens this summer.
No, not this summer. It's too early. All right, let's quickly do Pacers Bucks, if quickly at all. But I mean, we want to go for, you know, 20 something more minutes. Pacers Bucks, the 4-5. Damian Lillard has been reported already that he's going to miss the start of the series. He may miss the entire series because blood clots are no joke. Do not rush back, Damian Lillard, if you want to continue playing for a decent amount of time. Is this a series where it's just Giannis versus everybody? And is the everybody in Indiana too much for Giannis by himself to overcome?
I love the Bucks here. I love the
Bucks. I kind of do too.
I love the Bucks in the series. So a lot of this is...
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Everyone is kind of still basing it. This is what's funny is there's such a hangover from the playoff games where people are like, yeah, Bucks team couldn't defend last year, didn't have it, bad momentum, awful start to this season, Doc Rivers, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Pacers have been a red hot over the last 4 months, and they have been. They're a very good team. I wouldn't be surprised if the Pacers won the series, but the key, I think, here is that the Bucks have figured out something without Dame. If we get to Friday and it's like Damian Lillard has been upgraded to questionable for game one versus the Pacers, I'm out. Bailing. Going Indiana. And it's not that Dame's a negative. He's not. Like, the numbers don't back up that idea. It's not that they get killed in his minutes defensively. The numbers do not back that up. The evidence we have do not back that up. You're giving the Pacers a much different version of the team, which is it's closer to last year of it being like offensively balanced. This Bucks team is a throwback to 2019. Giannis, 4 shooters, 1 big, a big that can shoot. And those guys on the floor get it. They have athletes. I have never been a Gary Trent Jr. guy. He's been terrific this year, I think, for them. He has been really good, especially a lot better defensively than I think that I expected him to be last season. He's been very good, I think, defensively. Kevin Porter Jr. should not be in the NBA. He should not be on a roster.
Right.
He is, and however, he's been really good for the Bucks. He's been good on both ends of the floor. He's been the scorer shooter that they've needed, and he's been really good defensively, which has annoyed me to no end. He has been genuinely a positive defensively. Taurean Prince is one of the best shooters in the NBA this season, catch and shoot. Brook Lopez is still Brook Lopez. Bobby Portis finally looks like he's gotten some legs under him. That suspension, I think, was actually really good for him to get his legs back. He's been very good for them. Ryan Rollins, good. AJ Green, good. They have a deep roster of guys that fit around Giannis. And even in the non-Giannis minutes, they're going to be able to create some opportunities here. The Pacers, this is the biggest thing. You have an elite defense going against a pretty good defense in the Pacers. But the elite offense only generates twos, which the Bucks are well-built to do. Like, they're going to give up a bunch of mid-range shots, and the Pacers are going to hit them. This is a twos versus three thing. The Bucks have the best player in the matchup, as much as I love Hallie, the best player in the matchup, they have the math advantage with threes versus twos. That equation gets me to where I really do think the Bucks are going to beat them and advance to the semifinals.
I'm going to get to Natalia's comment in a second. I think from a narrative perspective, I think the most interesting outcome, if you're just looking for stuff to talk about and divulge in with this series, the most interesting short-term outcome is that Giannis just goes nuclear and just single-handedly wins the series, and he's averaging like 34, 14, and 7 the entire series, and the shooters are playing awesome. And then you have what I think could be a very compelling series between the Cavs and the Bucks. The most interesting long-term outcome that I think certain people, fans of other teams, will be rooting for is that the Bucks just get steamrolled because they can't quite put it together. Doc Rivers is gone, and Giannis has a future in question, is what I'll say. From that point, we were asked by Rob earlier about Ant's future. Giannis's future, I think, is actually more pressing. Dame's too, to some extent, and I think this series like could dictate that, because if the Bucks lose in 5 or 6, like, it's like, all right, back to back first round losses. You lose to the Pacers again, especially if they're healthy this time around. Then it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, but are they? Like, here's the thing is, like, if Dame's not there, I think that, that complicates things. Like, I don't know.
If he's back, if he comes back and they still lose. But yeah, he might not play the entire series.
I think it's going to be really hard for Giannis to be like, you couldn't get it done. I want out. Like, he might just be like, hey, I just want to change it. I just want somewhere new. I'm just ready to move on. That's different.
Yeah.
But if
it results in the same thing, does it matter?
I do think it matters here, because you like, it's just really hard for you to be like, hey, you lost last year because Giannis wasn't around. You lost this year because Dame wasn't around. And eventually it's going to be like, yeah, it just didn't work out here. Like, that happens. That's why David Griffin got fired in New Orleans. It just didn't work out. But I also think that it's Giannis with his connection to the franchise. When they're like, hey, we didn't have Dame, I think he's going to be like, yeah, I know. That's fair. Like, I don't think it's as imminent. It might happen anyway, but not because of the team's success. It's okay for him to just evaluate, hey, this team isn't good enough. That's his own prerogative.
Sure.
But I also think it's pretty hard to be like, hey, we went, and every time that you've gotten unhappy, we've made a major move to make you happy. And like, they've done what he's asked. And that, I think, matters.
Natalia says, thank you for the comment. I think the Pacers just have too much firepower. Andrew Nembhard is the fourth ranked point of attack defender, and they have Obi Toppin, who, if Obi Toppin wants to make a bunch of threes, I mean, that's going to hurt as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the defenders are really good. And look, I think the coaching matchup here makes me nauseous for betting the Bucks. Am I betting on Doc Rivers against Rick Carlisle? Am I really doing this? But ugh. I know, but I just think that when you look at it, the Pacers play a certain style, and there's only so far you can get out of your identity before you are out of sorts. And I think that to win the series, the Pacers would have to be so far out of their identity. Nembhard, I don't know that he's that impactful here. If you put him on Giannis, I feel like Giannis is going to post him. Giannis being, by the way, one of the best mid-range shooters in the league is a very huge thing here. The last time that he shot this well from mid-range was 2021 when they won the title. It separates how you get to guard him. You can't do that. We're all going to back up into the paint and build a wall down there. If he's like, I'm going to rise up and I'm going to hit this mid-range. If he can do that confidently, it's going to break that defense down a little bit, and it opens up a lot more. So those are the little things I think that can decide the series.
But also the Pacers give up a lot of layups. Yep. and Giannis's touch around the rim, obviously. The free throw shooting is not a small thing. I wish he was a more reliable free throw shooter this season. He just hasn't been. But he's going to get to the line a lot. He's going to draw a lot of contact. And I think Giannis with four shooters like makes me lean Bucks, but I don't want to bet it. You know, I'm not like rushing to, like, this is the series that probably scares me the most, even though I thought Nuggets versus Clippers, as we talked it out, was the toughest. But I still find myself like, there's a pathway to Nuggets that I just trust more. And in this series, it's like, I could see either team winning in short order, even. Like, I could see the Bucks. Like, there's a world where they just put it together and Giannis is being Giannis and this is over in five. And there's a world where the Bucks just get steamrolled and can't keep up with the Pacers and can't get the stops that you would want them to, and the Pacers win this at five.
Yep. I agree. 100%.
Let's do Knicks and Pistons, because we got to also talk about the play-in real quick. Knicks, Pistons. So this one, follow New York Post Sports YouTube channel, because I'll be doing watch-alongs with Dexter Henry. We'll be at the studio and we'll be watching a lot of these games starting with Saturday. They didn't, you know, I don't like that the NBA put this the same night as WrestleMania, the same time as WrestleMania on Saturday. So I'm going to miss WrestleMania night one, but I had a job to do. So Knicks, Pistons. I've already made two bets on this series, Matt.
Okay.
And this is not a betting show. We do betting content. This is not a betting show. But this is just a way to sort of look at the series. One of them is Knicks 2-1 after three.
Okay.
The other one is Knicks and six. I think the Pistons can get two. And I think the Pistons, second time that happened. And I think the Pistons could get 2-1 of the first two games,
yep,
and one of the games in Detroit. That's sort of the pathway. Like, I've been telling people, like, I could really see this being 2-2 going into five and six, and then the Knicks finish it off. But I think we come away from this series, like, I know the Pistons didn't have a ton of playoff experience or really any, and this is a franchise that hasn't won a playoff game since the late 2000s. But this team, like, they feel like they have some juice. They have some toughness that I think is going to bother the Knicks. And it's just Cade is going to need some help. And I just don't think he'll have enough in this series. But I think we'll come away encouraged by Detroit, no less. You look like you're about to disagree with something.
No, I'm not. Because I think it's interesting, because this is where I kind of came down in the series.
Yeah.
I have no idea how the Knicks are going to slow down this Pistons. I did it too. Pistons team. I have no idea how they're going to slow them down. Cade is such a bad matchup for them. He cooks everybody except Mikal Bridges. Everybody. Mikal does a really good job on him. And it's like, oh, he's too small. No, like he actually is able to get into his handle, and Mikal's surprisingly strong. And he's actually, with the way that Cade plays, Mikal's a very good defender on him. Everybody else is barbecue. Everybody else. Josh Hart, Miles McBride in particular, gets destroyed by Cade.
He's going to post him up.
If you're switching, he hunts Jaylen into oblivion. So you better send two. And once you send two, they're able to get what they want to, which is they're able to get to that corner three-pointer for Beasley.
Yep.
And that's their second preferred shot, is like, we're going to blitz you. You're going to blitz Cade because he's so good. And we're going to generate either an open dunk under the rim if you stay home, or we're going to get to, now I don't love Duren in the short roll trying to hit that pass. He's not great at it.
Yeah, I agree.
But you can do the elbow pass, the secondary assist with Tim Hardaway Jr. or whoever at the top, Asar, and then they can make that pass, that swing to the corner, and you wind up there. Now, they just, if they stay like weak side, you got two shooters, right? Mikhail and, or Malik in the corner for the three, and Asar up top. If that's the spacing, they're going to try and get Tobias up there. If it's Asar, that corner man who's having to guard both of those may just be like, I'm staying home on Malik Beasley. Asar can shoot. And like, that's a pathway, right? But like, that's what you have to do. Hey, you have to blitz effectively. Don't let Cade get the edge on you. Even if you blitz, make sure that you cover the short roll. Oh, and you got to make sure that Asar is the only one open. It's a tough sequence, but it is a sequence that you can get to. Versus, I don't know, like the Pistons are a better defense, but they don't have the personnel here. Jaylen and Isaiah Stewart, unless they completely change how they guard things, are going to drop versus Cat, because when they've played up on him, he drives past them for and ones. Cat's good enough with the dribble with space for him to get beat them off of the dribble and has the physicality. It's like Brandon Anderson's entire argument is like Cat's basically weak and going to get bullied by Isaiah Stewart and Jaylen Duren. Those guys are still young, and Cat is a much tougher, much older, much stronger player than he used to be. And so he drives consistently for those and ones. So what they do then is they're like, all right, don't give him that step, play back a step so you can absorb the contact. And then he's shooting threes. OG Anunoby, a lot of the other Pistons defenders on the wing are small. OG posts up Tobias and is able to get by him or body him. If it's Asar, he bodies him. If it's Beasley or Hardaway Jr., they body them. So they've got strength advantages with OG being able to work his way into whatever shots he wants. They don't have a lot of great screen defenders except for Asar, who's amazing. But if you're able to get Mikal Bridges switched, if you're able to get Asar switched off of him, right? If he takes the Cade assignment, or I'm sorry, the Brunson assignment, that now you're able to do things like, oh, we're going to run Mikal off a screen action with whoever's guarding him, and he's going to get clean pull-ups. The Knicks' whole offense is healthier in this matchup than the Pistons' offense is, even though both are very spry. This is going to be an over series. This is going to be a high-scoring series, because what it really comes down to is the Knicks are not good enough defensively with Brunson and Cat on the floor to stop or slow down the Pistons. But the Knicks inherently have too many weapons for Detroit, even with a better defense, to be able to make the impact on. Simone Fontecchio probably shouldn't play much in the series. He's not able to stay on the floor versus the various wings versus wing stop. Just can't do it. So that takes out a significant piece of Detroit's offense. I like the Knicks here to take care of business, but I'm with you. I think it's going to take several games, because I do think the Pistons take one of the first two in MSG.
The rebounding battle is going to be important to me. Neither team is top tier at rebounding, but what Detroit is really good at, and what the Knicks are good at as well, is keeping other teams off the glass. Yep. For 100 possessions, Detroit allows the fourth fewest rebounds, and the Knicks allow the eighth fewest. The Knicks were actually much better in that regard until the last couple weeks of the season. They were, I think, in the top three at one point in fewest rebounds allowed per 100 possessions. And that's going to be important, because those second chance opportunities are going to matter, especially if the Knicks offense, or really if either offense, just doesn't have it going any particular night. The Knicks did have, and this is something that the Pistons, I wonder if they watched closely, but toward the end of the season, Tuesday, where the Knicks played the Celtics, so this was a week ago, and they out-rebounded the Celtics by, I don't remember if it was 14, 15, something along those lines, and the Celtics started off the game 6 of 24 from 3, and then they made something like 15 of their last 25 threes, and they just mathed it up, And that was it. They still won the game in overtime despite giving up all those rebounds. And the Celtics aren't like an elite, like, well, they weren't an elite rebounding team that night. They're actually really good per 100 possessions, but you get the point. And with Detroit, I wonder if, one, they don't have, they're not going to shoot the same way, but are they going to look at certain blueprints? Because one of the things that's really killed the Knicks all season is just overhelping. And this is why they give up open threes. And this is why teams are really good at shooting threes against them, is because Cat gets caught on an island. And then whoever has the, and this is why Jalen Duren, like, his passing is going to be important, but whoever the big is, whoever is in the situation where you have Cat in front of you, like, you have to hit that corner shooter, because the Knicks are going to send help even in areas they don't need to, because when Cat's on an island, they just don't trust him. So OG Anunoby is going to overhelp. Mikal Bridges is going to overhelp, one or the other. And then someone's always going to be open. Like, the Bulls are really good at hitting this against the Knicks. The Thunder were doing it repeatedly, where they would hit like a Kobe White in the Chicago game. Oklahoma City, it could be any number of people, Isaiah Joe, whomever. And in this is where, like, Malik Beasley, you talk about overs. Like, he's going to be a guy that, I mean, threes leader, points, threes in general, like, we're talking like he could have multiple games of 6, 7, 8 threes because of the way the Knicks play defense, and because they always seem like there's a stretch. There's always like a big time 4 or 5 minute stretch where they're just constantly out of position, constantly out of position. Tom Thibodeau gets pissed off. He calls a timeout, and it's just going to happen in this series.
So much of this is such a fun, an interesting psychological part of the NBA. Great defenses get bad once they don't have trust in one another. And that's like the real key here, is the Nuggets fall into this circumstance too. And they're not an elite defense, or they weren't an elite defense last year, but they were better. They were pretty good. They were top 10 last year in defense. And one of the problems is just like, when you don't trust your guys, you're constantly like, I gotta go help. And like, it's natural. Like, you want to help, like, he's your brother, he's your teammate. You want to help him.
Right.
You can't do it, man. What you can't do is you can't surrender and a more efficient shot trying to shut down a bad matchup or try and prevent your teammate from being embarrassed or scored on. You can't. You've got to stay home. I'm hopeful that the Knicks will make the right decisions there and just be like, you're going to have to live with some stuff here. You're just going to have to live with it. You cannot constantly be saving Cat and Brunson in these situations, because you're going to wind up giving much more efficient shots, and that's how the Pistons can stay in this.
In 30 seconds or less, what does a Pistons win, a Pistons upset in this series look like? Because they're kind of a trendy upset pick for a bunch of people, from what I'm seeing.
Jalen Duren becomes a big name that everyone's talking about, how great of a game Jalen Duren has, because they're having to front so much to stop Cade from getting into the paint that Duren's dunking and passing and having really solid games. I think it looks a lot like Asar Thompson having a really quality game, making steals, transition plays, stuff like that, forcing turnovers, mistakes by the Knicks that wind up being making them look small and outsized. That to me is like the kind of the formula. The Pistons do need to play a very physical style. This Knicks team is a little bit finesse. It's Wingstop, but it's also like, it's a very finesse team. And if they do bring a sense of physicality, I actually worry less about Cat as I do about Brunson. Brunson, you can body a little bit. You can bully him a little bit. And when that happens, he gets a little annoyed. The trick is you got to be able to stay out of foul trouble. And that, I think, is a complicating factor. So how the whistle goes, I think, will determine this a lot. But the Pistons are live because I just think that Cade might be the best player in the series. And that's a big deal when we start getting into these. When it gets late in the series, the best guy often has the best chance of winning.
I would still say it's Brunson, but I would say that the Knicks have fewer answers for Cade than the Pistons do for Brunson. It's all about how this is officiated. Okay, let's wrap on the play-in, which begins tonight as of the time we're recording this. Which play-in team? So we have the Magic, the Hawks, the Bulls, the Heat in the East, and we have the Warriors, Grizzlies, Kings, Mavericks in the West. Which playoff team has the best chance of advancing and winning a round one series? I don't assume you're going to pick someone from the Eastern Conference. However, I think you might, because I know you pretty well at this point. Is it an Eastern Conference team?
It's the Orlando Magic. Look, best chance. Best chance, because I mean, and people are going to say, like,
it would be them winning against Atlanta than playing the Celtics.
Yes.
Okay. What's the case?
people are going to say it's the Warriors. Like, come on, it's the Warriors. It's Steph and Jimmy. I actually like that matchup for the Rockets a lot. I know the Warriors won the season series. I like that matchup a lot for the Rockets. Ooh. With what it looks like now with Jimmy Butler. I like the Rockets a lot in that series versus the Warriors. I don't think, like, it's not like I think that the Magic are 60% to win the series. It's not like I think that they are 50% to win the series. It's like 30%. But I want to talk about it, at least from this perspective. If you go down the list of the Boston Celtics and take them, look at their game logs and sort them by the number of three-pointers that they generated.
We've done this, yeah.
Three of the bottom five are Orlando Magic games. Mm-hmm. It's the thing that Orlando does best is they don't let you shoot threes. If they let you shoot threes, Orlando would be a 10 games under 500 team because their offense sucks, right? The offense is the problem, and Boston's defense is, it's simultaneously, it's this thing where I go like, well, actually, if you kind of dive in and put, take it, like, deconstruct it, it's not really elite. It's very good. It's just not like elite. And the problem with there is like, yeah, but altogether, is it? And it's like, yeah, it's a top five defense. And so I wind up like being kind of screwed there. Orlando's offense is the problem. They don't have shooters. Seems like an issue.
Right.
But there have been games with Franz and Paolo where all of a sudden you look up and it's like, oh, they actually like looked like a real offense tonight. That's what they did early in the season. I wish to God Suggs was back. It would change a lot of how
I agree. Because then I could really get on board with this.
Yeah. Without Suggs, it's been tough. But yeah. I do think that, like, look, big forward, switchability, deep and versatile. The Magic, I think, have a lot more guys. Like, here's a good question is like, do you want Luke Kornet or do you want Goga Batazde? Because I think that most Celtics fans are going to be like, you want Luke Kornet. He's the second most best pick and roll finisher. Look at his net ratings. Look at how good all these guys are. And I'm like, I like Goga, man. Goga's been one of the most impactful guys consistently. And he's able mm-hmm. to really win his minutes. The Magic have like a lot of options they can go to. All right. Hey, Anthony Black doesn't have it in the series. Let's try Caleb Houston. Okay. Caleb Houston doesn't have it. Let's try Tristan Da Silva. They can go to different options that they can just extend the game. They're going to get blown out in game one. That's going to happen. Like, I think they're good. I mean, typically the seven seed actually hangs in those games, but I think they probably get blown out in game one. But to me, this is just about, look, the Celtics have leaned so far in on the bit this series where it's every, like, I can't stress it enough. They were a balanced team that used math on top of all of their strengths last year to beat you. This year, it's math. That's it. We take threes. You don't take threes. We make threes. You don't make threes. That's how we win. And it's like, well, what does Jason Tatum do? Jason Tatum is one of the best guys at leveraging the way the defense needs to be leveraged to do it. But if Tatum was putting up 30 a night and you didn't have the math advantage they do on both ends, the Celtics are a lot closer to not middle of the pack, but just like a normally good team. What makes them elite is three-point shooting. And Orlando has an ability, not just in general, but specifically against Boston, to defend those. This goes back 2 years when even before the Magic were good, I was looking at these games being like, wow, Orlando beat Boston or hung with Boston. They have something here. The most likely outcome is the Celtics win that series in a sweep because they're much better than Orlando and Orlando doesn't have shooting.
Yeah.
But I like the way that that series looks, and I think it will be tougher for the Celtics than the perception is. So I wanted to at least talk about it, even if it is not technically the most likely with the Warriors.
I'd feel a lot better about it if the Magic were healthy. I do think if this happens in 2026, I feel like it's much more interesting because
it might be a year early. Yeah.
Because Orlando's still early in their development and they haven't made like the move. And with Boston, you know, this is a longer term thing, and they just had an ownership deal get announced. But, you know, it's worth wondering how much longer are they going to keep that team together, which is something that I wrote about at Action Network when it was announced that they were going up for sale. Because if you look at the cap sheet, like years down the line, it's going to be tough. But that's not a 2025 issue necessarily. They might have to blow up the team by 2027, 2028. You know, they may do it sooner just to get out ahead of it because everyone's running scared of all the aprons and being, you know, luxury tax to the like 10th degree or whatever the case may be. But I thought you would have gone Western Conference, so I love that you did that. For me, it's probably like, so you don't like the Warriors in a potential Rockets series. I do think that I still would want to go with the experience in that series. And it's not even needing a playoff Jimmy type of performance, though I think he'd be good in the playoffs. And I don't love him individually in that Houston series from an offensive perspective, but the Rockets late game offense has been a concern for me all season long. Whereas I can figure out what the process for Golden State's going to be. And if it's 84-84, because it will be 84-84 in the fourth quarter, with like 4 minutes to go, like I'm just going to trust Golden State's process more often. The issue that I have, though, with them, and this is why if Golden State even beats Memphis, it's going to be tough for me. Like the way they can guard Stephen Curry is problematic in how I feel about Golden State potentially. So this may have to become a Jimmy Butler series, or at least a Jimmy Butler fourth quarter series for Golden State to win it. And Houston has answers for him too. So this is one of the more fascinating series, if we do get it, that could play out for me.
Look, I think every year you got to kind of have teams you don't believe in. And I don't believe in Golden State. And I could be wrong. I'm not like so confident in it that I'm like, no. There's something about it. I don't watch them and be like, God, this team's elite. I don't. There's nights when Curry is hot and I'm like, God, Curry's elite. And there's nights when the defense is rolling and it's like, yeah, okay, this was a really great performance versus whatever flawed team that they played that night. I don't trust the overall kind of profile of them. I think it's like, all right, if you go small, you've got weaknesses in terms of physicality on the interior. If you go big, you've got problems on the perimeter with the kind of shot creation you can generate. The Rockets, I get it. A lot of this is like, look, the Rockets have beaten good teams. And at some point we need to respect that a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you're asking me like, well, how, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you. If you just want to be like,
if on you the just sidelines, Ime Udoka, I think is one reason. And then also like, they are a deep, super like hyper athletic team.
If you want to be like, hey, 84-84, if it's 90-90, I think it might be 84-84 late fourth quarter. But if it's like 96-96, right, with 220 to go, I'll take Steph and Jimmy over Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün. I can't blame you for that. What I do think, though, is I think this Warriors team, if you look back at this winning streak that they've been on with Jimmy, it hasn't been, there's been Steph games. But there's been like games where Draymond Green led them in scoring. There's been games when Quentin Post led them in scoring. There was a two-game stretch where Brandon Pajemski scored 58 points. Now, if that's Brandon Pajemski, okay.
Don't think so.
I think he can do it. I like Brandon. I like Pods. So like, if Brandon Pajemski has a good series, guess what? This is like Warriors in five. They'll have more firepower. But man, the Rockets have an identity that they know. Like they know who they are. I do not get the feeling that the Warriors know who they are. It's like, we know who our stars are. And then like the rest of the guys will kind of figure it out. Jonathan Kuminga not playing in the biggest game of the season on Sunday.
Didn't love
is
that.
Proof of that. That's a major, major addition. That is a major component of their team that they have just did not play on Sunday. I don't know what to expect here, but I will say that I still lean towards the Rockets.
Yeah, Şengün being guarded by Draymond is interesting. I think Şengün is going to have some games in that series if they do play against each other. But I think the fact that he's a distributor also helps. And then as far as the rest of the play-in, I mean, with all due respect to the Mavs, Kings, Bulls, Heat, I guess the Hawks too, and Memphis, I just don't see it.
If Mavs had Kyrie, I'd be in on them. I think that they.
I agree.
I think they would do bad things to the Thunder and make them way more stressed out. I just don't know, like who's your guard? Who's gonna initiate offense? How are you not gonna turn the ball over 50 times?
Spencer Dinwiddie.
And so yeah, and so like, and Kings, I'm just, you know, I just can't. They lost it. I just can't. It's like, are you telling me that the Chicago a better, not even better, like the Chicago Bulls from not 3 years ago, but 2 years ago, that team is going to beat the Thunder in a seven game series? No, come on. So I'm out on Kings. Yeah. Mavericks, I'm still going to be kind of like, eh, we'll let's see what they do.
Yeah.
Anthony
Davis is still there.
I like that the AD versus the Thunder lineup.
I agree.
Sequence, but we'll see. Kind of, I'm like, let's see.
Yeah.
And then, and then Hawks and
Heat Bulls.
Heat Bulls. No, just no. Cleveland. Oh. Cleveland's gonna run roughshod over those teams. I don't.
Yeah. Although I could see. Like, you know how sometimes we get the shock, not sometimes, every year we get like a shocking game one.
Yeah.
I could see the Cleveland, Bulls.
Yeah. Cleveland feels like the one that's most likely to be like, what? That feels very much like the one.
And then they sweep 2 through 5, yeah. But like the Bulls would get.
Everyone panics.
Very tempted if the Bulls beat the Heat to take Bulls spread and maybe sprinkle some money line mm-hmm. against the Cavs in game one. The Heat less so, but I mean, they're the Heat, so who the hell knows? They're just not the same Heat with Tyler Hero leading the way. Bam might do all right in the Cavs series, but that's another story for another day. Okay, that is Matt Moore. Thank y'all for watching. We will be back with more playoff coverage, and I may put out something boxing related this week. Before the week is over, a lot to do. Follow me on social, follow Matt on social and his many Substacks and his many jobs. And I will be very much covering a lot of Knicks Pistons. So you can check me out on New York Post sports channels as well, where we'll be doing watch alongs for every game. I will be at most of them, including game one Saturday. If you leave a comment later, I will get to it. And again, thank you for the support. We will talk again very, very soon.